This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show.
Truth, because I'm happy.
Clap along if you know what happiness is to you.
Because I'm happy.
Clap along if
welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Joel Elston here for Thursday, October 6, 2016. And this week we had a little technical difficulties with our first attempt trying to record this. So this is our second attempt. It's kind of a nice way to kick off October, Joel, because this week we're actually doing something that kind of mirrors something we wanted to do all along, which is to do morning drive shows. Well, we aren't actually doing a morning drive show, but we're recording in the morning, so that's kind of a new thing for us.
Well, that's our ultimate goal, and the idea that we're starting off in the morning doing a show, this is a nice test run for the Law of Attraction. So we're going to think about this show being live and callers calling in. So this is a new beginning for us, I hope.
It is. And we're also doing more Law of Attraction stuff in that our technology is giving us trouble in other ways. So I don't have quite the control I normally have when I record these things. So Joel, I got to remind you, back off on your mic because I can't control your volume right now. But that's right. We'll get through the whole thing.
Certainly. I'll step back. My volume's hard to control.
Yeah, I know. Especially when you have a voice like you have.
Yes.
You penetrate entire buildings.
Yeah, my boys used to tell me I needed to go to whispering school. This voice doesn't whisper well, as you can imagine.
No. No, but that's all right. We do the best we can. You just got to remember to stay back and stay low, and if you can't do a whisper, do something, you know, somewhat close to it.
I'm backed about 3 feet away from the microphone, so we'll see how that works.
Okay, all right. Well, it helps. I mean, I can see we're not peaking the meter too much, so hopefully it's going to work out fine.
Sure.
But, this has been an interesting LOA week for both of us, I know. I got to tell you a story that happened to me yesterday, actually. You know, of course, that my favorite form of exercise is just simply walking every day. And so I went out yesterday to take my daily walk. Now, we've had a lot of really good weather lately, and so it's been really fun, right? But yesterday, it was cold, it was damp, it was all those kind of nasty fall things where it isn't really comfortable outside. It was overcast, it wasn't pretty. And you know what happened, Joel? I had the most amazing walk of the year. And
wow.
I say that because I was able to do something I've never been able to do before. Most of the time, I use my walks to get out there and just, you know, feel good and find the happy thoughts and count the blessings and do the three gratitudes and all that kind of stuff and get myself feeling good. Yesterday, I was able to do something new. I was able to go from zero to happy without doing any of the techniques. I just said, I want to feel happy, and I started to feel happy. I could just feel myself push it up, you know, pushing the happiness up into the higher happy zone, and it worked. And I was amazed by it because that's, I think, the first time I've ever been able to do that in a big way. I've been able to do it in small ways in the past, but yesterday I was able to get myself from really a very neutral to slightly negative stance to feeling really good in about 10 minutes. I couldn't believe it.
Wow, that's so. The fact that you're able to do it that easily, when you're able to repeat that every day on a that's the goal. That's you're wanting.
I've been wanting that for like the last 10 years.
yes, and the idea that you're able to implement it without having to put a lot of thought and energy into it is to me the amazing thing. That's what the goal from all this is to become second nature.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're actually more in the spot than I am of having the consistent upward spiral going on throughout your day. I'm not quite there yet, but I feel really good that I got there in terms of being able to just get there. And if I can get my concentration really going, I think I got a real good chance of staying there throughout my day starting today.
That's great. And I love how that energy feels when you're feeling that way and how, how different the world looks. And the perspective that you get to choose when you're feeling that way is so amazing. And instead of looking at what's wrong, you're able to clearly see what's right in your life. And that's the amazing thing that so many people have not quite figured out how to do. is look at what's amazing in your life. And when you're feeling that way, you're inviting more amazing things in your life. I know it sounds redundant, but we say that in some form or fashion. That's the point of the law of attraction. We say that every day, every time we're on the air.
Right.
It's just, and it's so, such a great thing that you found that without having to go through the gyrations that tend to, you know, we tend to put ourselves through in trying to get there sometimes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I feel like I took the training wheels off. That's what it feels like. You know, when you're a kid, you have the training wheels on the bike. I took the training wheels off. It feels like that. It feels freeing.
Well, and that you know what I equated to as you said that? I don't know why this popped into my mind, but years ago when I first started understanding or being online and understanding the internet, I signed on through AOL through a phone connection.
Right.
And I view that's the internet with training wheels. It sort of walked you through, and you know, you'd go to a chat room and you might even go on the line. And I remember when just internet came out, when you're able to get a just a direct connection to the internet, I thought that was like, are you kidding me? I can't. I even used high speed internet and went through AOL still for a while. And it wasn't until I was able to take, quote unquote, the training wheels off and realize I don't need AOL as a gateway to going here. And that's sort of the exact same thing with the law of attraction.
It is.
And I don't, I just realized that AOL is law of attraction backwards. So,
good point. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. I just visualize that as we were talking. So, but I love that, Walt. I love the fact that you're able to do that. And I know in my life, this has been an amazing journey. We're actually, as we mentioned, we're recording in the morning on a Monday morning. And I have, as most of our audience who have listened before know, have heard me mention, a couple of years ago, my son TJ was killed in an automobile accident. And 2 years ago, I was down at the bench in Florida, my place of refuge, and I 2 years ago today, I laid his remains at the bench. And while that was bittersweet at the time, it was certainly a place. He loved the island that we're at, that we lived at, and he loved all the stuff surrounding the bench and the water and the beach. And so I knew that was an amazing journey for me and a necessary journey that I didn't quite understand what would transpire over the next 2 years since that happened. And ironically, this past weekend, I was I had a young man stay with me. He's 10 years old, and he's in foster care. And he will at some point be coming to live with me full time. And I'm looking at the contrast between 2 years ago and today. And I find that just how amazing life is, how my perspective, and while the loss of TJ was unbelievably horrible, it was the joy he brought to my life was such a driving force in me moving forward. I never thought I would consider bringing another child into my home. It's a great thing to do for anyone listening. However, you got to be prepared. It's one of the hardest things you'll ever do. You got to be prepared to do it. And at 54, bringing a 10-year-old into your house, that's exciting.
We're talking major energy level here.
Major energy level. So this weekend, he absolutely wore me out. But it was just an incredible journey. And I wake up on a Monday morning, not even realizing the timing of life and the synergy of life. And I realized that it was 2 years ago today that I had laid TJ's remains to rest at the bench.
Yeah.
So this has been just such an incredible journey for the last 2 years. And you don't realize the journey that's taking place until you can stop and look backwards. And this is just a life that I never could envision that I would have. And I love my life and I love everything attached to it. And I clearly see that I have a reason. I have a purpose to be here. And by getting up every day and keeping positive and with a few days in there that didn't quite match that, but able to overcome that sort of the way you're talking about, the abundance that I have in all areas of my life is something that I just cannot imagine that I would ever have. And the fact that I do have it and feel like I feel, it's just such an uplifting experience that I just would love to be able to keep fine-tuning it where I can do this just for a long, long time. And I feel very confident in that.
Well, the fact that you do have it suggests that you did imagine it at some point, but nevertheless, it's fair to describe it as unimaginable if it is more wonderful than anything you could ever possibly have thought you
right.
had.
Right. Well, and that's the point. I imagine I wanted this life. I always wanted I pursued this life for years that I have now, and I didn't know that it could exist, even though I wanted it. We talked before, I believe it was last week or the week before, about Mike Dooley, how he would say he was about being nonspecific in what you want, just wanting this and bringing about a life. And there's other law of attraction practitioners that feel differently, where you need to be very specific. But in this case, I don't know if I could have imagined it this specifically working out the way that it's worked out, which I'm very, very excited about.
Yeah, we did talk about that a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? The importance of generalizing what it is that we're trying to attract into our lives instead of spending all of our time. Not that it's bad to spend any time focusing on very highly detailed things that you're requesting the universe to bring to you. But Mike's point with that particular view that he expresses is to say you get a whole lot more if you leave a lot of it to the universe in terms of what the great stuff is going to be. In other
exactly.
words, you just make it really, really generalized and let the universe fill in the gaps for you because it can do it so much better. And that's what you're describing here.
Completely. And that the efficiency of the universe is far superior to the efficiency of Joel. I've learned that. We can establish that right off the bat. In fact, sometimes the efficiency of Joel is that of, it doesn't remotely register. But the idea that the universe is very efficient at what it does, and by allowing those blanks to be filled in and being truly happy and fulfilled and looking forward to waking up every day and living that life is just such a journey that I wanted and I could envision, but the exact details as seeing it unfolded doesn't seem plausible almost. It's almost unbelievable in some ways, especially the timing of it all, which I am in awe. I mentioned last week on the show, I believe, I try to wake up every day and have a wow every day. I plan on saying a wow at least once a day. And I can, stuff will happen. I'll go, wow, this is more than I had planned. This is more than I could envision. And it's such a great uplifting life to feel that way. And everybody can do that. That's the point. This is, no matter where you're at in the spectrum, once you can say wow and be impressed and be grateful that it's happening and not automatically go on the default mechanism, okay, what can go wrong now that this unfolded? And which is an old way of thinking for me.
Yeah. The other thing that occurs to me is yesterday, Louise and I were having a conversation, and I was thinking about this whole thing of positive and negative and how we have been taught by almost every kind of teacher in our lives, including many LOA teachers, that you can't be happy all the time. And you and I have discussed this before, and how it really doesn't make any sense when you also look at it from the negative perspective, because it's perfectly possible. We know of people who have, such extreme depression that they're depressed all the time. So, I mean, if you can feel negative emotion all the time, you can certainly feel positive emotion all the time. But to actually now start getting into the realm where we're getting to the point where we're feeling that more and more often. You're feeling it very, very much. I'm getting there in a way that I hadn't gotten to before with my breakthrough yesterday. And it gets more and more exciting the closer and closer you get to it.
Yes. And that becomes the drive to do more and to do more and get more involved with this. And I think the idea that you can't be happy all the time, as you mentioned, there was a period of my life where I was sad all the time. I was deeply depressed all the time.
Yeah.
And I believe in the sort of the yin and yang of the universe. If you can be one, you can be the other. There isn't a moment it has to exist equally is my point. Mm-hmm. And there isn't a moment in my life that I am not striving to be happy all the time. And I will have days, entire days where I am very happy. And most, I would say generally, I'm very happy most of the time. I don't have many incursions into that with that negative train, but there have been occasions. But I do believe that being happy all the time, it isn't an illogical view or an irrational view of the world. It is, to me, a choice we get to make. Happiness is an internal decision you make daily.
Yes.
It's not thrust upon you by anyone else. It is an internal decision you make daily. If I have one day to live, if there was just this meteor that the universe hasn't told, or our government hadn't told us about, is going to hit the end of the day today, I am fine for the rest of the day. I know that everything, whatever's going to happen, is going to happen. I have everything I need today. My environment is exciting. I feel great. And while I certainly don't want the world to end, there's really nothing today that I need to do to worry about, especially if it's over now. When I worry long term, or if I start thinking about stuff long term, way in the future, it to me that creates anxiety. If I start worrying about what's going to happen, when I mentioned that I'm bringing a new foster child into my home at 54, my mother, who is a great practitioner of the law of attraction on the other side, the negative side, she certainly enjoys worrying.
I love the way you describe that.
Yeah, she's really good at it. And she pointed out to me that she said, well, do you realize how old you'll be when he graduates high school? And I said, yes, Mom, I do realize that. I can do the math. And she says, okay, well, I just wanted to make sure you were aware of that.
Well, it's a good thing, because you're going to be able to help him with the arithmetic homework. So that's a good thing.
Exactly. I don't really understand your point. And I did understand her point, but sure. I wanted her to explain it. And she says, well, you know, you're going to be in your 60s. And I said, yes, I will. Thank you. Again, I can do the math. At that same point, that's way down the road. Right now, I'm providing a home for a child. I don't know where this goes. I have no idea what happens. There's all kinds of courses it can take. But for right now, 10 years down the road is not really relevant to me. It's really relevant to what we're doing right now. And I have rose to the occasion for every challenge that has come along. I have been 100% successful in dealing with things that I cannot believe that I dealt with or didn't think I could deal with. So this will be one of those things that I deal with no matter what happens. I don't need to worry about 10 years down the road. As the law of attraction will have me focus on right now, living in right now, combining sort of the power of now with the law of attraction, which all goes together, things could not be better than they are right now.
And that's fantastic.
There's no sense in worrying about at 62.
And it's interesting. You mentioned that she's an expert at the practicing of negative LOA.
Yes.
The thought that immediately came to my mind when you described this whole scenario was, if I were talking to her, my first reaction would be to say, well, you know, 60 is the new 40. That's the way it is these days. I mean, there are lots of people in their 60s and 70s, and it's very obvious that they're not going to be, you know, hitting the grave in the next 5 years. They're going to be around for the next 30 or 40. So, you know, saying that because you're in your 60s that you're somehow over the hill or something doesn't even apply anymore.
Well, the ironic thing is my family lives to be ancient. We have incredible and they all, you know, they all have treated themselves horribly physically. My grandmother never ate properly. She, you know, lived to be her 90s. I mean, it's something that we have to take for granted. But that idea that life is today, I don't view myself as old at 54. I'm in the gym every day. I'm stronger than most 25-year-olds. And I'm not saying that in an arrogant way, but I work out very hard. I eat pretty well. I don't eat perfectly, but I eat pretty well. And my food is naturally sourced. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. So with all that being said, I don't have a problem envisioning that, you know, as somebody said, you're going to be the old dad. And I said, well, yes, I will be the old dad in the class. But at the same time, I won't be an old dad. I know I'll be the old dad, but I won't be an old dad. And that there's a difference in the two. I mean,
there is.
Old is a state of mind.
That's right.
And you know, as I said, I work out with 25-year-olds. They don't view me as a 54-year-old man. Mm-hmm. They view me as a peer working out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's again, it's about perspective. But with my mother's ability to very successfully use the negative side of the law of attraction, she's done it her whole life. So her first instinct, now she's very happy for me. And she's excited, but her first instinct was to look at the negative of it.
I'm glad that she's happy and excited.
Yes. Yes, she is. And she immediately came back with that. And she realized, she said, well, I know you don't like it when you point out reality to you.
Boy, does that speak volumes. Reality is negative.
Exactly. And I said, well, I said, I it's not that I don't appreciate you pointing out reality. I said, I want you to understand you're pointing out your reality.
Right.
And there's a difference between our realities. Can you accept that? And she's like, well, I'll try. And she
probably thinks there's only one reality and that everybody's in the same reality.
Exactly. And that's the thing. As I've said many times, you know, your perspective creates your reality, and you are 100% in control of your perspective. No one is in control of your perspective but you. The other outside influences can affect it, but you're in control over it. And once you realize your perspective does create your reality, everybody's reality is their own individual choice every day. That goes against what a lot of people like to believe, because other beliefs take away responsibility.
And they do.
Yes. And the law of attraction is about personal responsibility.
Which is a difficult concept to deal with if you're not used to dealing with it. And it's also a little bit tricky to come to terms with if it means having to face certain decisions that you made about yourself over the years.
Yes.
Because now all of a sudden, all of the boogeymen that you were blaming can't be blamed anymore. That's a little disconcerting.
Right. And I've had multiple people, in fact, one client recently, we've done a really good job on working her through this process, but she came from the traditional background. She said, when she first got there, she said, I feel I'm being punished by God. And I said, well, you must be really important for God to take all this time and energy to punish you. And she didn't like that at all when we started that way. I said, God has a lot of kids starving around the world, and the fact he can spend his time torturing you is pretty impressive.
Yes.
And as we talked, she started to see her choices are what led her to be the victim of her life. And she kept making the same choice over and over and over. And then she kept realizing, you know, her first husband was a complete sociopath.
Mm.
Her second husband was also a sociopath, and her third husband was a sociopath.
I detect a pattern here.
I said, just stepping back, I said, I tend to think you're attracted to sociopaths. And she said, well, you're suggesting those were personal choices, that I did that on purpose. And I go, it's hard to find three sociopaths in a row to marry.
It takes effort.
Yeah. God didn't randomly put a sociopath in your life for you to marry. What happened is your perception of things, your attraction is picking up the stuff that goes along with a sociopath. And as we walked through this with her, she could see her personal responsibility. And the law of attraction brings that to us, where you get to choose this, and she has successfully, first of all, we agreed to take a year off from any type of relationship. That she needed a break from that. But she also needed to realize her first reaction was literally a radar for sociopaths. I mean, the people she was looking for were sociopaths. So she's had to readjust what she's looking for. And she's dating a man, and she's almost broke up with him three times because he's actually too nice.
Disconcertingly nice, I would imagine.
Yeah. She's like, well, we don't ever argue, or our arguments are rational. And I'm like, yeah. And she said, well, I miss the passion of the argument. I go, oh boy. Mm. There's a side of you that's been addicted to the argument. So right. The internal focus for us is when you break it down to your personal responsibility to be happy, to find out what's your, you know, I use the term responsibility. It sounds as a heavy word for some people, but finding ways to find your happiness is a personal responsibility. And once you accept that responsibility and then realize you're in control of it and the world is not conspiring against your personal happiness, then that's a big relief.
Oh, it's a big realization to come to, actually.
Yes.
It's huge.
Yes. Well, when I say relief, it to me, you take away the curse of life, and then, but the hard part is, okay, it was almost easier when God was punishing me, because I could blame God for it, and then everything, I'll go do the other stuff that I do to keep perpetuating this. When I understand I'm responsible, then I've got to change behaviors, and attached with behaviors is a way of living. It's just not behaviors. It's very uncomfortable to change.
Well, that's a really important point, I think, because you described a woman who had three straight sociopathic relationships, and that's not just, you know, effective law of attraction and of the bad kind, but you think about it. I mean, she was actually in a personal life danger situation three times, because sociopaths are known to do some really nasty things.
Oh, absolutely.
And yet, she was unaware of the pattern. That there's something really striking about that, because it shows, even for somebody who's in a really, really, really bad series of events going on, that they can still block off from themselves the true cause of it. They can just be oblivious to the role that they're playing in it. And if somebody who is, you know, unconsciously seeking sociopaths can do that, what does that say about the rest of us? It says that any of us can be like that. We can be in that place where we're repeating a behavior and we don't even know it.
Yes.
That's kind of scary. And that's actually part of the discovery process of exploring the law of attraction. I know it's been for me discovering behaviors that I didn't even know I had.
Yes. And that's the to me sort of the side effect, and the very positive side effect, is when you can look at and see how you keep responding the same way.
Yes.
You, not necessarily Walt, but our audience or anyone, is...
Well, no, including me, because, I mean, I found that I would do certain things that, after I looked at it for a while, I said, wow, I really do that?
Well, yeah, and it's always the stuff you don't particular, whatever matches your, what you particularly don't like. You know, the idea of rejection for me was very difficult. I hated rejection. And I think, I don't know anybody that really loves rejection, but
not me.
The idea that I don't like to be criticized, or I don't like an idea to be shot down. And I know when I wrote my book, and I was looking for publishers, and you know, I had to mentally prepare for rejection is a part of it. It's just what comes along with it. There is going to be rejection attached to this, because that's just the nature of the business. Mm. And the idea of becoming comfortable with the rejection for me was something that I had to do in my life coaching business. I have a sort of a protocol that I do, and I meet with every potential client for a free session before we begin. And I want to see if it's a good fit. Well, probably 9 out of 10, I think, are usually good fits. But there's occasionally one that I don't, there might be some more psychiatric issues that I'm not really above my pay grade in a lot of ways. But there's others that might not necessarily like my style, but occasionally one will come along that I will feel is a very much a slam dunk. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be a great client. And I never hear from them again.
That's disconcerting.
That is. And, you know, part of my thing is I don't pressure anyone for services. So I basically tell them after our free session, think about it. You understand what we do. And please give me a call if you'd like to set up another session. And again, the majority do, but it's hard to let it go, especially when you had a good connection. Now, what happened, why he or she did not call me back? What, I wonder what they thought. And that's always been, you know, one of my things, and I've gotten to a really good point of it wasn't ready. I have plenty of clients. I'm doing well. I always want more clients that are matching. I've turned down clients too. I've told them that, you know, I didn't think we'd be a good match. So the idea that not everybody's going to buy into this, it's okay. It really is. Mm-hmm. And I just have to accept that. But that's always been a fear or an underlying, I didn't like that concept of being rejected. And I still don't like it, but I've learned to accept it as part of the process.
Well, as you know, Louise used to be a therapist like you, although she didn't do it from the law of attraction perspective. And she is a believer in LOA, particularly now. She just didn't have the knowledge of it at the time. But she and I have talked about this very thing a few times. And what she came to realize is that very often when she thought somebody would be a perfect fit and they didn't come back, it was probably because they all of a sudden were face to face with a reality that they never wanted to face before. And that was a bit of a scary thing. And just by talking to her, just because the match was such a good match, they realized they weren't going to be able to run away from it. They were going to have to face it every single week, and they just weren't ready to do that.
Yes, and that's the piece, that not personalizing every rejection, or not personalizing any rejection, is really the key, or whatever you have going on. It we tend to want to personalize everything, and what your biggest fear is usually what you're unintentionally attracting in your life. If your big fear is rejection, you're going to keep doing that. And
doesn't that suck?
it does. Several years ago, I was dating this lady, and I have, and our two fears literally fed off of each other. It's amazing we found each other. She very much needed someone to spend a lot of time with her. She really enjoyed someone spending a lot of time. I am someone who, I like my freedom. I don't want to plan something 3 months ahead of time. I enjoy spending time with my relationship, but I don't want to make it like I'm clocking in and somebody's keeping score of how much time we're spending together. And so I told her, I said, if I feel I'm being pressured in a relationship, that's when I tend to get freaky. And she said, I understand. And she said, but I also don't need to feel like I'm second best in your life. And I said, I understand that. So we were going along relatively well. And it was actually during a time when I was in the process of adopting my son, TJ, or he's in foster care. Uh-huh. And the idea that I was spending a lot of time working with him and didn't have as much time to spend with her became a big issue for us.
Yeah.
And I had what brought it to a head is one day we were meeting, and she called and she said, she lived a little bit away, probably about an hour away from me. So she said, I'm going to be right down the road from your office for lunch. And I said, great, let's get together and we'll have lunch. Well, I had to pick up TJ at 1:30 and get early release day from school. So we were having lunch and everything was great. I kept looking at my clock, like my phone, like, okay, I got to go.
Yeah, that's definitely a killer right there. So, for somebody who is really hung up on, so you got to spend time with me, that's not going to work.
Right. And so that process, I realized the more I did that, the more uncomfortable she became. And then she started saying, well, we only spent 3 hours together last week. We only spent 6 hours the week before. And I realized, okay, you're doing the exact same thing I told you that drives me crazy. You're keeping score.
Right.
And we were having a very logical conversation. And I said, why I don't think this is going to work is your phobia and my phobia are feeding off of each other right now. Mm. And we are destined to have this battle forever. And she was like, well, I can change. And I said, I don't know if you can. I said, I don't think I can, as far as it. The more you push me, the more I'm going to back away. The young lady that I've been dating now for a long time completely understands that, and we really have a really great balance. But this one back then, she wasn't able to grasp that. So what tends to and that pattern for her, unfortunately, and I'm still friends with this lady from a long time ago, but it has repeated, and she's probably had 9 relationships in the last 10 years that have all ended because of the same thing.
Yeah, the octopus syndrome is what I would call that. You got to just keep hanging on, hanging on, hanging on. It's one of the best ways to drive anybody away, regardless of whether you have a phobia about it, just because it becomes annoying after a while.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the piece. But you'll notice when you start identifying your own stuff, and this is me not judging her. I'm owning my side of that. But you keep finding these same patterns, and the law of attraction is showing you that these patterns are bringing you a set of consequences. Consequences is not good or not good or bad. They just are. And if you don't like the consequences that your behavior keeps bringing you, you can't expect different consequences by doing the same behavior. That's just the lesson of the law of attraction.
Mm.
That's how I work with clients, of helping them change their behavior, which forces a new set of consequences to come along. And hopefully those consequences are more matching of what they're wanting.
It's funny you should mention that, because just last night I was thinking to myself about how, before the law of attraction was explained to me, right? Before I had teachers teaching me what it was, how it works, all that kind of thing, I was like, you know, everybody else, trying to make sense, make head or tails out of how this crazy universe works, because none of it makes any sense. I mean, it seems like you should follow the rules, right? The rules are you work hard, you're going to make a good living, and you'll have a happy life. Well, it doesn't work that way for a lot of people. Very often people work very hard, they have miserable lives, and their lives are unfulfilling, and when they're all done, they're unemployed, and they don't have anything to do afterward. I mean, it's not, the promise is not kept, you know, the American dream promise, if you will.
Right.
And to find out that that's not the way the universe works made me think last night, you know, it's not surprising that there are so much difficulty, so many difficulties, so many problems, so many wars, so many, you know, broken relationships, so many everythings that go on in this world, because we don't come into the world with an owner's manual. We don't have anything that says, well, here's the way this world works when you arrive here. So, you know, just follow this rule and you'll be great. It doesn't work that way. And yet, to have that combined with the fact that, like you say, we are responsible for what we do. Well, that's quite a combination to overcome. So on the one hand, when you find out how the world really does work, it feels great. And on the other hand, I look back and I say, how on earth did we ever figure it out? It's hard to fathom. Yet somehow we do it. But I'm still not sure how we do it.
Well, it's one of those, and I agree, it's very, these are things that we have to see, or you have to live. While I have an understanding of the practice, I have yet to logically comprehend all of it, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, for Harry Potter fans, the last book, I think it was, where Harry and Ron have this big fight and they split, and Ron ends up coming back, and during their conversation, it wasn't during that, it was actually an earlier book. There's one point where Ron and Harry are kind of at odds. I think it was in the fourth book, because Harry got into this tournament and Ron didn't, and Ron thought Harry cheated his way in and didn't share how he did it with his best friend. Well, later on, he finds out that what Harry got himself into was really a nasty situation. Nobody in his right mind would ever volunteer for it. And in the course of them coming to that conclusion together, Ron tries to send a message to Harry through Hermione. And the message is so convoluted in the way it's worked, the way he works it out, that it's impossible for anyone to figure out who sent the message originally without being actually told, oh, this is actually originally came from Ron. Well, that's not, of course, the way the thing played out. It was played out so that Harry got all these signals and he didn't understand where the signals were coming from, but they ended up to a certain result. And he finds out later that Ron was the one who instigated that. And Harry's reaction, or Ron's response was, well, I figured you could, you know, figure all that out. And Harry says, who could possibly figure all that out?
Exactly.
I mean, that's just completely mental.
that's the onion, the layers of the onion. I keep finding new layers as I peel back the onion, and it's there's more and more. And the intricacies of how all this goes together I told someone yesterday, the law of attraction is like trying to understand eternity as a human. I can define it. I can give you some practical advice involving it, but eternity is something that humans can't really understand because we have no point of reference of what that looks like. Mm. We can talk about it, but we logically know, but to really understand it, because we view everything through a beginning and an end. Yeah, the law of attraction has the same stuff in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah, we basically are trying to imagine what eternity is like from the point of view of a very limited imagination.
Right.
That's a tough battle.
the law of attraction is very similar in that understanding. While we can get, while we're plugging in, we say frequently that I still feel I have a kindergarten or a first grade level understanding of this. Mm. I'm working, maybe I'm getting close to second grade now, but the idea that there's still so much more, and I sense it, the enormity of it. And this may sound a little dramatic, but I do feel it is such an incredibly powerful tool that exists. Or the law, it's not even a tool, the law of attraction is so incredibly powerful.
It is.
As a human, it is so, in human form, it is difficult to understand. I believe in spirit form, you'll have a complete understanding of it, but because you're not limited up to the brain and the function of the brain. But as a human being, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to totally comprehend something that is so powerful that you have a weapon at your disposal that it's almost like a nuclear bomb in some ways, because it can be equally destructive to you as it could be incredibly beneficial to you.
I'll tell you what, though, there's also another way of looking at this, which is that instead of being, first graders, we're actually graduate students. And the reason I say that is, despite all the odds against us, we still managed to figure this stuff out.
Yes. Yes.
That's pretty cool right there, the fact that we can actually do that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the piece to me that I love is we're able to I'm able to, as you have been able to do, we are able to get enough of a working understanding of it to respect it. But at the same time, when we have our days where, I'm a few weeks ago, I had that, what I call that, that terrible Thursday where everything sort of imploded
right.
on me.
Yeah.
The fact that that is going on, and I had my toolkit of the law of attraction and all that's involved with that, and I had it at my disposal, and I wasn't within the day able to stop the downward spiral. Now, quickly telling you that the end result within a few days was an amazing turnaround.
Mm.
But that one Thursday was a very difficult day. And so I believe that day happened. I have a very positive spin on that day as a reminder to me that you're getting good at this, but you still have more work to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really something. It's one of those paradox situations. On the one hand, but on the other hand, yeah. The thing that is...
Yeah, exactly. But...
No, go ahead.
What I'm so excited about, that as I keep feeling like I'm feeling, and I understand that I can, I can overcome that, all this stuff, the toolkit becomes more and more solid. And I, yes. When I'm sharing with clients, like this lady I was speaking with earlier who ended up with all the sociopaths, you see the behaviors attached to that. And you see it in children working with, foster care kids, seeing the very negative that they keep, they're being exposed to. You've been taken from your home and you can't help but internalize that.
Mm-hmm.
Why was I taken from my mom? Why didn't she want me bad enough to fight for me?
Yeah.
All of that stuff becomes ingrained, and that's why it's such a huge hill to climb. And the young man that was with me this weekend, I said, I want you to remember one thing. I said, let me tell you. I said, it won't make sense right now. At 10 years old, I said, there is greatness in you. I need you to understand that, and I want you to help you see that. But there is greatness in you. You've got to believe that. You're not a mistake. You're here for a reason, and everything that you've gone through will strengthen you if you allow it. And while at 10, I don't know, he was very attentive, and he listened. I said, I can't wait to share that concept with you as you go, as we go through this. But the idea that that's the, my biggest mission as a foster parent will be to change his perspective of himself, that inner dialogue needs to be changed as quickly as possible. That's my first goal.
It's a great goal. And the thing that really strikes me is how attentive he was. You described that he was attentive. He may not be getting it entirely, but he was attentive. That tells me he's ready for this. I mean, yes. He is ready to be on board and say, okay, I want to absorb this like a sponge. Give it to me.
Yes, and I have found, as I told you, with other clients that weren't necessarily my foster care kids, but kids that were in foster care, that I have seen them absorb it like a sponge and apply it in their lives in ways that is just absolutely fascinating and, and effective. And I believe the younger you are, the more, if you're willing to listen, the easier you can accept these concepts.
Yeah, I think that is true. I guess it's because, like we talked about before, when you go through life and you start absorbing more and more of the negativities that society kind of teaches us and trains us to accept, it does become a little bit more difficult, and you don't have quite as much of that. Although, somebody who is in foster care has already gone through a whole lot anyway, so it's not like they don't have any of that negative training to overcome. But I think you're right. I think it's a little bit easier. I think part of it is because when we're that young, the only way we can learn certain things is just to kind of take them on faith until, you know, proven otherwise, because we really don't have enough background to go on.
Right. Well, the growing up as a child in the Southern Baptist Church, I for so long I just accepted blindly what they were telling me, and while I can remember thinking, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but okay, I mean. You know, and the moment I would question anything, like, how did they get the penguins on the ark? How did they get the penguins? did somebody fly them there? Or, you know, there weren't planes and they came all the way from Antarctica. I just don't understand. And, the moment you were questioning, it's like, okay, well, that's just Satan talking. You need to quit thinking that way.
Yeah, right.
It's like, well, no, I don't think Satan has anything to do with that question. I mean, it's just real, you know, there's two of every animal and the penguins were a long way away. I don't know how they got to the Middle East. That piece I still don't understand.
It was FedEx.
But as I've grown, as I see things differently, I really see the pieces as they fall into place. And I love sharing that with people. And I love to see people applying that in their lives. And it really is a great adventure that we're on, if you think about it. I mean, we're on this planet that's spinning around at just a really fast speed, and it's circling this huge sun that's circling this massive, you know, when you look at all the moving parts, it's very exciting. And we're here for a speck of time, when you look at the history of time, but yet we have so much to feel and do. And I just get really excited that we now have a tool at our disposal that we're not randomly controlled by all these forces that we thought.
You know, the funny thing about
that. Randomly controlled by. We're in control of a lot of this.
Oh, yeah. The funny thing that catches my attention about this whole thing of getting excited about how the universe is. And you know, like you said, the planet surrounding this, going around the sun, and all this stuff going on, and we're only here for a speck of time. That is an ideal perspective, but it's not the only perspective people have. Other people have a perspective of it all being a crazy, screwed up, negative, mixed up kind of situation. The exact same situation, just viewed differently.
Right.
Which is part of what learning about LOA is all about. It's about changing that perspective, changing a perspective from a negative one to a positive one. And it makes me think back to the beginning of the conversation where I told the story about how I was able to get myself into a happy mode during my walk yesterday for the first time in my life. Well, I was just realizing, as you were describing that, I actually developed a method and I didn't know it. I actually developed a method. The method that I developed was to smile. Now, that doesn't sound like a whole lot, but I can't remember when it was, probably about a year and a half ago, something like that. I did a show with my sister-in-law, Yuona, in which she was talking about the power of smiling physiologically, how it affects your body. And then later on, I replayed Sean Aker in a TV version of his book, The Happiness Advantage, in which he talks about how you can take a pencil or a pen and stick it sideways in your mouth to force your mouth into a smile position, and you'll actually inject a small amount of positive endorphins into your bloodstream, or into your nervous system, I should say. I guess it's both. I'm not sure exactly where the endorphins show up somewhere. I'm not sure where they go, Joel, but they're in there somewhere.
They're moving around there, yeah.
But the point is, you get this injection of endorphin, of you know, dopamine and so forth, with the feel-good stuff. And yes. It occurred to me, you know what? You can do that regularly. It's not like you have to wait until something nice happens in order to smile. It's a nice, quick way to give yourself that little bit of a jolt. Well, I've been doing that for quite some time. I've been forcing myself to smile at times when I'm not feeling great, just to give myself that little bit of a jolt so that I can find something to be grateful for or whatever, you know, and start getting into the positive mode. Yesterday, I would smile and I'd get to the positive mode. Now, I'm not sure if it's because I was training myself that way. I'm not sure if it's because I had just reached a certain chemical threshold and now that little extra jolt was all I needed to get there. I'm not sure what it was, but I found my mechanism. My mechanism is just to put my mouth into a smile position and wait to see what happens.
That is such an incredible tool. The idea that faking it till you make it is a term that is used in 12-step programs forever. And smiling, even when you don't feel like smiling, is faking it till you make it. When you smile, you then bring about that the body has to adjust to that. And there's a gentleman at the gym, one of the gyms I go to. He's a really sort of a grumpy old dude. And I may have made it a point every day that I'm there and he's there and I see him, I say, "Hi, how are you today?" And for probably a year to year and a half, he just would look at me like I was crazy and never say a word.
Yeah.
And I didn't let it affect me. And this is a couple of years ago. Finally, I said it one day, and he very frustrated. He goes, "Every day you speak to me, and I ignore you every day, and you continue to do it."
What's wrong with you?
He goes, "Don't you see? I don't want to talk to people." And I said, "What you don't get is I wasn't doing it for you. I was doing it for me." And he said, "Well, I don't understand that." And it actually opened up a conversation. and it turns out, after a long story, this man was very bitter. He lost his wife and son in a car accident many years ago. And the idea that he had bought into the concept of the universe was stacked against him, and he just is bitter, and he played the role of a bitter man. And I said, "I'm going to continue to speak to you every day, and you don't have to speak to me." I said, "Or one day you may shock me and say, I'm not going to be bitter anymore. And I'm here on the earth anyway. I might as well try to at least have some enjoyment, but either way, I'm going to speak to you every day. And unless you get a restraining order against me,
that would be an interesting restraining order to get. Yeah. Your Honor, I want to get a restraining order because this guy's nice to me."
Yeah. He actually sort of smiled when I said that. Well, And we went another about a week or so, and he just sort of rolled his eyes when I would speak in. Finally, about, I don't know, probably a month after our conversation, I said, "How are you today?" He goes, "I'm actually doing okay, thank you."
Whoa.
And to this day, now we've never talked in detail but I speak to him every time I see him, and he answers me every time now. I don't know any more details than that, but it's a change. And he certainly, I see him smiling some. He seems happier. And I one day hope to have some time and sit down and talk with him and ask what's happened. Mm. But there's certainly a difference. And the idea that we get stuck in the roles, we play the roles of bitter people. We play the roles of what we expect. And I'm not trying to be a negative here. We can play the role of being happy. We can play all of this. We get to choose who we want to be every morning when we wake up. That is a gift that's been given that can't be taken away. I know people that I talk to who are in prison for the rest of their life.
Wow.
And they have changed their way of thinking. They're grateful for what they have, and they're happier than a lot of quote unquote free people.
Mm.
I have one friend that is in prison that I made to a sort of an email chain that he has his preacher that writes emails for him, and so we've been emailing back and forth. And he read a copy of the book, and he says it changed his way of thinking. He said, I'll never get out of prison, but I cannot be self-imprisoned anymore. And I've let myself out of my own prison. And he physically is in prison for the rest of his life, but he is now in a position where he doesn't torture himself every day, and he's found happiness. He's happier than a lot of quote-unquote free people I know.
Mm. Wow. That's really big. That's huge. I feel good for him that he has achieved that level of peace, and maybe he can, you know, take this horrible life he set up for himself and turn it into a good one. It sounds like he's already on the path.
Well, he talks to other inmates about this, and you know, he says it's a very, you know, most people in there aren't receptive to the concept. He said, but a few are, and he's at great peace. And he said that he, as long as he's here, he's like 52. And he says, you know, I'm healthy and I'm here and I want to feel good every day. He meditates and he's found a way to be happy in a place that most people could never imagine to be happy. And anybody can do that. So if someone who is in prison for the rest of their life can find that, our audience members can find that as well. And that it doesn't take much more than what you describe, Walt. Learning how to turn the on-off switch by smiling that's pretty incredible.
It is incredible. And I'm not sure what's more incredible, to be honest, the fact that it works or the fact that it didn't work so much before. I'm not sure what to make of that, other than somehow I seem to have gotten myself into a place where I'm more receptive to it. But I can't really explain it beyond that.
Right. Well, I think it's Dr. Joe DiPenza, which I speak about, is a quantum theorist and talks a lot about how our thoughts sort of shape our lives. He wrote a book called "You Are the Placebo," and
nice title. I like the title.
An incredible title. And within this concept that we are the placebo, he talks about, he has a belief that when you the reason medications work a lot of times is because you believe they're going to work. And he shows a lot of evidence of stuff like that.
Right.
And the reason the smile's working now is you now believe the smile is working now.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, because I do believe it now, and I did doubt it before. I guess that's part of the fake it till you make it stuff. But you're right, because I would try it. And it's not like I didn't feel anything happening, because once I read or actually heard from Sean Aker that you get this little jolt of dopamine, little dose, so to speak, I would try it, and I could feel it. I could feel like there was like a little tiny bit of a pick-me-up going on there. But despite that fact, it seemed like it was going to be inadequate, so I didn't really believe it until over time I allowed myself to believe it.
Yes, and the very first time that I ever heard anyone describe to me the book The Secret, sort of the introductory to most people's law of attraction understanding, the very first time I heard it, I'll never forget when somebody was explaining it to me, and I immediately went to, well, that's ridiculous. That's that would mean that, you know, children choose to be abused. That would mean that children choose to die of cancer. You know, I got on my high horse of where all that went, and I can remember very clearly verbally dismissing it, but internally going, there's something to that.
That's disturbing. That's really disturbing, because you're giving yourself mixed signals.
Yes, and I didn't want to be responsible for my own suffering. I didn't want to be responsible for my own recovery. It was so much easier to be powerless and just be a sort of a pawn in the universe versus the idea that, no, get up, be responsible for your feelings, own your feelings, take action. That was a message that I think a lot of people get turned off about, because being a victim of it all becomes a lot easier in a lot of ways.
It does. I just wish we had more time to talk about it. We always run out of time before we're done, so to speak. But it happened again. Joel, it's been a pleasure as usual.
Walt, great to talk to you.
Great talking to you, too. We invite you all back next time as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody. It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.